You're listening to the Master Passive Income Podcast Network.
Charles Jr. with Breakthrough Investor, where we help you break through that next level as an investor. And with me today is William Palmer, real estate investor, coach, and the amazing co-host of Breakthrough Investor.
Welcome to the Breakthrough Investor Show, where we guide you to financial freedom and break barriers in your investing to give you the secrets to success. And now, here are your hosts, Charles Rose Jr. and William Palmer.
William, what's up, buddy?
Oh, not much, Charles. Very happy to be here. Super excited about today's interview, especially hearing about how she's gone from a corporate job in 2011, getting into real estate, and basically has been phenomenally successful. Started her own broker and owner of Second City Real Estate. And basically since 2020, if I'm not mistaken, 2020 alone closed $130 million in transactions, which is an absolutely insane number. A really, really short period of time, but really interested to just hear how she got started, what started that whole journey for her, and then just kind of some of those roadblocks, maybe some of those things that she had to get over. It's going to be a really fascinating interview. Very looking forward to this.
Man, I'm super looking forward to it too, man. And what I love about our guest today is she really has a passion for helping people, whether it be her clients or just other investors in general, man. I mean, you know, just looking at the things she's accomplished, her team. I mean, they've helped their clients achieve over $2 million in rental income recently. William, can you imagine that?
Like, that's insane.
That's insane. Like, seriously, like we need to be some of her clients, William.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%.
I know. It's crazy. And she even coach others and so many other things. So, man, I'm really excited to hear her story. So let's just welcome her to the show. So, ladies and gentlemen, help me welcome our guest today, Bree Schmidt. Bree, how fantastic are you doing today?
Doing great. How are you guys?
Doing fantastic.
Oh, great. Wonderful. We're super excited to hear your story. That we know you hit some roadblocks. Everything wasn't always roses and peaches and easy to get started. So why don't you get started by sharing your investing journey? What initially made you get started?
Yeah. So, I mean, long story short, like, I've always really had a passion for real estate. I started as an unlicensed assistant for a real estate agent when I was 17 years old. So I didn't go to college because I was going to get licensed the day I turned 21, which was like the legal minimum in my state. So I worked for her part time until I was able to take my classes and get licensed. You know, 21 years old, I quit my job to go be a full time realtor and I hated it. I really struggled. I mean, I lasted probably 9 months for a variety of reasons. Right? At the time, you're 21 years old. But looking back, it really had to do with the fact that no one wants to trust a 21-year-old to buy their first house. So I really had a problem establishing trust with clients who were much, much older than I was. But the other part, and the real important part for me, was there was a real lack of communication and seeing eye to eye. Right? They wanted to look at a house and talk about how it made them feel, right? Mm-hmm. And the paint colors. And like that just, you know, went right over my head. I wanted to talk about like the cost per square footage and like, you know, how you can make improvements and increase the value. And like, there was just this huge disconnect in the communication. So I said, I lasted 9 months on the job. I went into corporate, spent the next 9 years doing corporate advertising sales, really loved what I did, traveled all over the country for work, worked in a lot of business development roles and supervisor roles, and thought that was going to be my life. Like, my goal was to be a corporate CEO and, you know, have corporate credit cards and expense accounts, right? Like, that's what I thought my life would be. And that was going to be very exciting for me. So when I was about 28 years old, my father was diagnosed with a very aggressive form of cancer. So it was one of those, you know, with treatment, you've got 9 months to live kind of situations, and all hands on deck, you know, working through estate stuff and setting things up and dealing with hospice. And so he ended up dying the day before he was supposed to retire. And that really messed with me, because like, he'd always talked about like, I'll retire after you get married, or I'll retire after your brother finishes his PhD. And then when I retire, I'm going to go to Thailand. You know, we're going to go on a 1 month hot air balloon ride, whatever. He talked about all these cool things he wanted to do when he retired. And then he essentially got a 9 month death sentence out of nowhere and didn't get to do any of it. So here I am, you know, so I was like 28 years old thinking like, wow, like that could happen to me. You know, I could spend the next 30 years of my life with my shitty 2-week vacation, you know, never getting to do these things that I want to do. And like, what if I have that same fate? So I got to figure out how to live my life now and replan everything. So at the time we had bought a house, a 3-unit property in Chicago. We really had no intentions of buying any more property. That was going to be our forever home. We were going to eventually, you know, convert 2 apartments into 1 when we needed more space, and then eventually convert the whole building into a single family house. That was the plan. But things changed, you know, and so my husband and I sat down and really talked about what we see our next chapter being in our lives, right? What we actually want out of our life and what kind of job fits into that. So the goal always was like, let's just buy, you know, a property a year. And then, you know, eventually in like 15, 20 years, we'll continue to work our crappy corporate jobs and we'll have enough rental income to retire early. And then we could spend our 50s, you know, traveling. That was the goal. So we bought another property and then we bought another property. The third property was a live-in renovation. So we ended up being able to pull out a substantial amount of capital from that one after we finished the renovation project. And then I was really at an impasse of like, well, now what? You know, now I've got all this capital. I'm working, you know, 60 hours a week. We've got 3 properties that we're managing. We could buy more. And that's when I really started getting into the Bigger Pockets community, started reading other people's stories, right? Listening to podcasts, reading books. I had never read a single book about real estate investing at this point.
Wow.
And really just spiraled from there. So we decided to look at other markets. We ended up buying in the Milwaukee market. And it got to the point where my corporate job was getting in the way of my investing. You know, I always really wanted to make sure that my investing never interfered with my corporate job, but then somewhere along the line, it switched. So I ended up quitting my job and then I bought 18 properties in the next 9 months. And then I bought another 10 properties in the next 9 months with partners. And that's really what fueled my full-time real estate investing.
So wait a minute, what year did you actually make that transition, that switch? Because if you started with the triplex, at what point did you decide, hey, what year was it you decided, hey, we're going to really, really hit the gas pedal on starting our investment journey?
Yeah. So I bought my first property in 2011. My dad passed in 2012. And then I quit my job less than 2 years later.
Wow. That's pretty fast.
It's pretty fast. Wow. It's like, I always joke, I used to be a normal person. I used to be able to go to parties and hold small talk about sports or, you know, what was on TV. And ever since then, like, my life has absolutely become real estate. I said, I quit my job to do this full time. I thought I'd be one of those people that would just like sit in cafe and read books. And I was not that person. So I ended up starting my brokerage firm. I ended up starting a conference business. Now I also coach real estate agents on how to work with investors. So like, literally, I wake up, eat, sleep, and breathe real estate and my kids.
That's fantastic. That sounds like me when I get with family stuff. My wife's like, you need to chill out about the real estate stuff because nobody else speaks that.
The small talk becomes so boring, though.
It does.
Like, yeah. I'd rather go home and read a book than, you know, have some sort of mundane conversation about stupid, like what happened on The Bachelor last night, you know?
Yeah. So when you got started, and I know everybody hits some roadblocks or some barriers at some point, and were there any like mental barriers, things you had to overcome to really push yourself to the next level?
No, not mentally, okay. Because I became so obsessed. Like literally my husband would be like, you got to stop getting up at 3:00 in the morning and running Excel numbers. I'm not kidding. That's what I would like. I'd wake up and I'd start thinking about this property. You know, I'm like, well, maybe if we did this, then, you know, and I would literally like, he'd wake up and like, get up off your computer. I really like went down a rabbit hole of obsession with it because it was fun for me. Right. And it's still fun for me. That's my favorite part about being an agent is like, I always say like real estate's like crack, you know, like once you get hooked, you're hooked. It's like, I get that. To run numbers and run strategy with people every single day. You know, like I've had my firm for almost 10 years. Like every day I get to wake up and crunch numbers and talk strategy with clients. And like, it's what I love to do. So I still absolutely love it. But then I became really obsessed. The hurdle that I really had was with financing. You know, we had pulled out a good amount of capital. I had a pretty aggressive growth plan, but I was investing out of state. So Milwaukee is about 1.5 hours from Chicago. It's not too far. But I had a real problem with finding someone that was going to finance me. Because if you know, on the residential loan side, you can go up to 10 mortgages, mm-hmm. right? I knew that we were going to go over that. So I knew that we were now going into the commercial world with LLCs, which is a completely different ball game than residential. And I literally just started calling banks. Like I would Google commercial bank in Milwaukee and then just call up and ask for a banker. I'm like, hey, I've got this portfolio. I'm looking to put it under contract. I've got my numbers, my spreadsheet. Will you take a look and let's talk about financing me? And they all said no. No, no, no. I must have talked to 15 different banks. I'm not even kidding.
Wow.
You know, being, I only had 3 properties at the time, so I didn't have a lot of experience. I was out of state and I didn't have a track record in that market. So no one really wanted to work with me. I was desperate. I felt like I was like slinging out my stuff, you know, hey, here's my stuff. Why don't you buy me? And no one was biting. So I ended up out of desperation one day posting on LinkedIn. And said, listen, like, this is what I got. This is what I have under contract. I need financing. Who can help me? And I remember some random guy I've never even met before called me on a Sunday morning. He's like, hey, I got someone that could finance you. The deal is, though, it's through a broker. It's going to cost you 2 points. I'm like, sure. You know, if that's what it's going to take, that's what it's going to take. And I think a lot of people always are like, I would never pay for those things. I would never pay a broker. I would never pay points. But that relationship bought me my first 5 properties, and I ended up financing 25 properties with this guy.
Wow. That's great.
So those few $1,000 of points to pay off to that broker to establish that relationship was absolutely well worth it to me. And I got super lucky with the person that they put me in touch with because he got me. Like we had in the first 5 minutes, he's like, I get you. I get exactly what you're doing. I believe in what you have. Like, let's do this. It's like the first, we bought 5 properties in July of 2014. Yeah. And then he kind of trained me on like, this is how we're looking at. This is how we underwrite.
Right? Oh, so important. Looking at,
it's so important. So once I learned what, like how they underwrite the deals, I was then able to run all my numbers their way, even though it was not how I would run my numbers, and present it to them in a way that like, I already knew it was going to get approved. I already knew it minimum. So from there on, like I said, like I bought 5 properties in July. I did another 5 in August. In December. I did another 5 in March. And then I did another 3 in May. And it was like, boom, like, here's what I put under contract. Here's all the numbers. Here's the financials. Here's the package. And they'd be like, great. You know, when do you want to close? Like it was that easy.
So when you're doing that, are you buying lower and then doing a cash out refi and then going to the next one for an entire portfolio? Is that how that was working for you?
No, we were just buying and holding.
Buying and holding. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, were you paying like a down payment on these or were you? Okay. So you're about 20%?
25% down with commercial.
25% down. Okay. Mm-hmm. This is awesome. Like your story is just so mind blowing. Like I'm still like mind blown how like you went from, you know, you and your husband, you know, wanting to close one property a year and then enjoy your 50s.
I spiraled, man. I spiraled.
Yeah.
Spiraled upwards.
Like, boom, but, 28 properties in 18 months. Like that's mind blowing. I mean,
but there was definite challenges. You know, one of the biggest challenges was probably growing too fast. So, you know, I knew we had an aggressive growth plan. So I wanted an in-house property manager from the get-go. So from the first 5 properties, I had hired someone that was going to run the portfolio for me in Milwaukee. The issue with Milwaukee, at least at the time, was once you bought a property, when you record title, it triggers an inspection with the city and the city comes out and gives you a list of violations. So, these properties are all 2 to 4 unit properties. So for every bundle of 5 properties, let's say it's, you know, between about 15 units that we were buying at once, right? You have tenants that would move out before we even like took over, you know, or tenants that would never even respond to us. And like, eventually would just like ditch the house, you know, getting everything set up with new tenants, paying online, payment systems, right? Contact information. Then the city hits you with a bunch of violations you got to fix, right? At the same time, I'm shopping for new stuff. So it was like, I probably lost, I would say easily $30,000 in just things that fell by the wayside, you know, like we would miss something on an inspection and now we have 48 hours to fix it. Well, now I don't have time to properly shop out bids. You know, I need the guy that can do it tomorrow, regardless of the cost. You know, again, if we had grown slower and at a more manageable pace, I would have been able to have more communication with tenants up front. You know, hey, we're buying the property. Here's our payment system. We would have had time to stop by each unit, talk with the tenants in person, get them set up. But we didn't have time for that. So tenants like either wouldn't get our letter or, you know, wouldn't really care. And then they would just move out. you know, and now we've got turnovers and the violations, right? And so it was a very, very chaotic year. You know, I did it that way. Am I glad I did it that way? Yes. Was it the smartest way? Probably not. I definitely learned a lot real quick because I had no other choice. But then it became too much for my property manager. You know, he was one of the life lessons that I learned, and probably one of the basis is the foundation of my belief system now, is that you can't be good at everything, right? And I think especially as independent entrepreneurs, we think that we have to do everything, right? Like we have to control everything. This is our baby. This is our business. And it made me realize that people have certain skill sets, and it's really important to just focus on those skill sets. So my property manager at the time was really good with tenants. I loved how he was with tenants. He knew their kids' names, when their soccer game was, who was going to what school, like what their hobbies were. Like he was really great with tenants. He was really great with contractors. You know, we had a huge network of contractors. So-and-so is going to be in the area. He was doing a plumbing job down the street. He can come over and fix your toilet tomorrow, you know. But he was really bad with accounting and any sort of organization. It's like, it was to the point where like, I would get a $10,000 cash deposit in my account and be like, what's this? He's like, oh, I've got the receipts in my pocket. I'm like, what do you mean you've got the receipts in your pocket? Like, I'm like, has so-and-so paid rent? He's like, I don't know. It's like,
yeah.
I would literally go up there like every 2 weeks. I would get a hotel. I'd stop by his house. I'd pick up this bag of receipts. I'd grab a bottle of wine and I'd go to my hotel and figure out who paid rent, who didn't pay rent, like, and put everything into an accounting system. And then I have to tell him, like, hey, so-and-so hasn't paid rent in, like, 2 months. He's like, oh, I had no idea. It's like, that was, so he couldn't do that whole job by himself. And when we started then growing with partners, I had then other people's money was my responsibility and took it really serious. So I had to go on and hire an outsourced property management, because that didn't work. So had I gone with a systemized property manager in the beginning, I think we would have been in a better position than having the control that I desired by having an in-house team.
That's a really good point, Bree, because I know a lot of people sometimes when they get started, they're like, well, you know, I want to self-manage, or, you know, I want to create my own team and do this. So that's good that you step back and you realize, okay, what can I do to make this better, right? Versus giving up, because some people, they give up in those moments. And a part of breaking through that next level is doing exactly what you did, which is figuring out like a system, like a way to make it work. So how important would you say is putting like systems and processes and everything in place to help someone scale to that next level?
It's imperative, you know, as you grow. So like that was the one business, like I said, the same year I started my brokerage firm. So now I was dealing with clients in Chicago and traveling to and from Milwaukee every other week. And of course, like when clients need something, it never happens when I'm home. You know, I can't tell you how many times, like there's an offer that's due in an hour. I'm like, I'm on the side of a highway in, you know, Bumble, whatever, Wisconsin, trying to like send a DocuSign on my hotspot. You know, like there's gotta be a better way. So.
Or somewhere across the world, right? Because you like travel.
You know, one of the things that I've learned said, you know, I got super obsessed. So when we did our acquisition phase, which was like 2014, 2015, you know, then we worked on stabilization, right? Then it was more about improving systems, processes, right? How to increase efficiency. That was really my focus, like 2016, 2017. And at the time I had just gotten divorced. I'd met my new husband, who I'm now married to, but you know, it was like our second date. And he had taken off work to spend the day with me. And like at some point during the day, he's like, this isn't going to work. Like you're always on your phone. I'm like, well, I've got two businesses that I run right now. You know, like I've got things to do. He's like, but if I'm taking time out of my day to spend quality time with you, like I expect the same in return. And I was like, you know what? You're right. Like I've got to figure out, because like at this point I was working more than I was working corporate. You know, and that's when I really had to start voting, like, and we wanted to have a family, on how I could create more time in my life and really optimize my time. So that's when I started working on improving systems in general. So one of the things that I did was I tracked my week. So at the end of each day, I wrote down what I did that day, how much time it took me. And at the end of the week, I tallied it up and would look at, okay, I spent you know, 5 hours on accounting this week. I spent 10 hours on marketing. Like, I hate marketing. I'm not very good at it. It's one of those things that when it's on my to-do list, like, I procrastinate it. So it's like, okay, let's outsource. Like, what can I outsource and what can I optimize? And then I would track the next week and look at, okay, I was able to cut 10 hours by, you know, outsourcing this or changing this. And then I just really focused on that for like probably about 3 months until I got my systems down into a place like, okay, now my work week is pretty optimized, you know, and I'm spending my time doing the things that I enjoy doing and that I'm good at doing. Right. And then it just kind of evolves from there. So it's a constant process. I even like probably once a quarter, I've got to kind of go back and reevaluate what I'm doing with my time and where my time is best spent.
That's awesome. Did you find that, or did you end up getting with other investors or other like-minded people? Did you seek anybody out for anything, or did you just?
Absolutely.
So I'm always curious, because it seems to me the people that are really successful end up getting to a point where they're like, I need to get around more people who are doing what I want to be doing or are doing what I'm doing now. I was just curious if that was something that you ended up doing or not.
Absolutely. I actually ran I started a meetup in Chicago in 2013, and I ran a monthly meetup in Chicago until COVID shut it down. And then we just never went back to it. But yeah, I mean, I love, like, my whole 99% of my friends now are real estate investors. Almost my entire network of personal relationships are all real estate investors, because I can't hold a conversation with normal people anymore. You know, it's really the truth, 100%. I really can't. Like, I find it so boring. So my friends are either all real estate investors or mom friends that have kids my kids' age that drink wine and we have play dates. Those are my only kind of friends.
That's fantastic.
Absolutely. You know, a lot of it just came through, you know, natural fruition. You know, people I met at a conference. I love speaking at conferences. I used to travel again before COVID a few times a year doing conferences, and they've just become friends, you know, friends where either you're stuck in a situation or, you know, you've got an idea. But I would say like almost all my friends are people that are now are real estate investors that I've met through networking events or conferences throughout the years.
Fantastic.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So now I know that you and your firm, you all do an excellent job helping investors build their portfolios and finding the right properties. As someone being an investor, trying to continue to grow, how important is it to work with investor-friendly agents, or, you know, or is it better to just work with any agent? What are your thoughts on that?
You absolutely have to work with an investor-friendly agent. I would say 95% of agents have no idea what they're doing when it comes to investors. It's a real challenge. And so it's a real pain point for me, because I get a lot of referrals. Like, a lot of clients come to me when they've already bought a property with someone else a couple of years ago, and now they're stuck. Right? They're stuck with either a negative cash flow property, or they can't buy anything else because it's not showing properly on their tax returns. And whenever I go back and look at it, I'm like, I would have never bought this property. Like, what, you know, the agent was trying to sell you something, right? And didn't know what they were talking about. So absolutely, you need an investor-friendly agent. And we're out there. There's a lot of us out there. So one of the things I always like to say, and this is what I do with my clients, is when someone comes to me, and let's say you want to buy in Chicago, which is the market that I do. When someone comes to me, the things that I want to know is, what's your budget? Where do you think you want to buy? And what do you think you want to buy? Right? With those three pieces of information, I like to go back through all of my analysis of old properties and say, okay, here's three properties I think that would fit your goals. And here's the breakdown of numbers on them. And let's talk through them, right? Because now we're having a real conversation about actual numbers on actual properties that you think might hit your goals. And it helps understand if your objectives in this market are realistic. So it's a test I always like to tell investors, if you're looking for an agent, is tell them, hey, I've got $500,000. What would you buy in this market? And ask them for three examples, you know, and that can tell you like what areas are they telling you to buy in, right? Why are they telling you to buy these kind of properties? What's their breakdown of numbers? Are they including things like vacancy capex, right? Because a lot of agents think that a cap return, the cap rate is just rents minus taxes and insurance. Like, it's a joke. You know, like, how conservative are their numbers? Like, that springboards you into a real conversation with them to find out, what's their mindset? How are they going to run numbers for you, right? And if they're going to be a good agent on your team. It's simple as that.
Is there like a special website or button you can go to find a investor-friendly real estate agent or broker anywhere in any state?
Not that I know of. That would be great for that, right?
It takes some time, right, Bree? I know, you know, I haven't found it either. Normally some people fire their agents, but I was the guy who got fired by my agents. You know, some of the agents I had, because, you know, one of my agents literally told me, he was like, I'm sorry, I can't put an offer for you unless you're within, you know, 5% of the asking price or whatever.
I would have fired you too. I would have fired you too. Yeah.
So, you know, maybe you would have fired me because, you know, I'm looking for good discounts and everything, you know. Some of them were like, if you're not putting in, you know, minimum to asking price, you know, I'm not going to work with you.
So this is a perfect thing. So this is the job of your agent, is also to train you on what's realistic in this market. For the last, I don't know, 6 years, 97% of offers have been multiple offers over asking price. So yeah, if you think you can get a discount on MLS properties, then you're not realistic. Now if you want to start sourcing your own deals and doing direct marketing and trying to find market deals where you can negotiate, great. But at least in my market, your agent's absolutely right. If you're going to be putting offers at list price, even list price is too low. Like, you're just wasting everyone's time. Your expectations aren't realistic. Just because you're looking at a deal based on the purchase price, right? And the offer to purchase price, you need to be looking at a deal based on the cap rate, right? What's the return of the property? What are the rents and the improvements that are needed? So I teach my clients to buy based off cap rate, right? The price doesn't really matter. The cap rate matters and what the potential return is. But you're not, I think in the last 6 years and that $140 million of deals we've done, I think I can think of one time we were able to get a property under list price. And it only because it had been sitting in the market for like 5 months.
Yeah.
That's just,
That would probably be market specific, right? Because I mean, personally, I've bought quite a few on the market. But maybe not, but definitely not in Chicago. So, you know,
on the market, but in most markets, it's multiple offers over asking price still. And even with this whole interest rate situation, it's gotten even more competitive. You know, I had a deal last year where my client made an offer $80,000 over asking price and got outbid.
Wow.
You know, last summer. I mean, if you weren't going $40,000, $50,000 over asking price, you really had no chance.
Wow. Now, how do you think that'll play out in 2024? Do you think we'll have the same conditions with, you know, offering over asking price with the, I believe, the Feds that are going to cut rates at least 3 times in New Year's? Do you think that's going to still keep the prices pretty high?
Absolutely.
This year?
Because we've had such a lack of inventory the last 18 months. Unless there's some sort of flood of the market with inventory, I'm talking like triple, quadruple what we saw last spring, then we are absolutely going to continue to have a very competitive market. You know, I don't, like a lot of the real estate experts predict that, you know, housing prices, this is the cheapest it's going to get. It's just going to continue to increase. You know, it's an issue with supply, right? And I think it depends on the market. Like in areas like Chicago, there's nowhere else to build. There's nowhere else to build. Now, if you look at markets like Phoenix, for example, I'm not sure if you're familiar at all with the Phoenix market, but like once you go like outside of like Surprise, you could start building, but like now you're in the boonies. You know, in most markets, to add any more inventory of housing, you have to go like really far out into the boonies and people don't want to live there. So I think we're kind of maxed out in our metro areas as far as housing supply is concerned, and that's not going to change.
Wow, man, that's awesome. Well, this has been completely amazing, Bree. It's just amazing, like hearing your story, everything you overcame, and it's just awesome. But more than likely, maybe we missed something. Is there anything we missed to help our audience become a breakthrough investor like you?
I mean, really, it's about trusting your instincts, right? And it's one of the things that when I talk with my clients, is my job is not to sell you a property. It is not. My job is to teach you enough to the point where you are 100% confident making an offer on a property, right? I want you to go to bed at night being like, this is it. This is the house. This is what I want, right? I don't want you to go to bed at night thinking like, oh, well, you know, what if this tenant vacates? How are we going to afford this? Or what if this happens? Like that worrying shouldn't keep you up at night, right? You should be educated enough to the point where you are able to make confident decisions in your acquisitions, right? For some people, they can do that in 3 months. Some people, it takes 2 years, right? So whether it's reading books, listening to podcasts, right? Going to meetups, whatever it takes to get you to that point of confidence is what's really going to change your ability to grow as an investor.
That's great. Bree, awesome. We know that a lot of our audience is probably going to want to find you. Where can they find you on social media, websites, LinkedIn?
My handle is Chicago Bree across all social media. So that's where you can find me.
Awesome.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Bree, for coming on the show. And we hope to connect with you some more soon.
That's it. Thank you so much.